Step into the light. Enter the culture catch. Joining me today is the ambassador of bluegrass music, Mr. Del McCorry. Converge is the word.
The truth is I'm running from the fire that's scorching the dry wood of my heart. Can you hear the thunder in the distance? Can you hear the crackle of the flame? Can you hear the beating of my dark, wild heart? My heart might be in chains, but my soul is still untamed. Blazing through the blue of the sky, my spirit soars so high when I see you. That love light burning in your eyes. Can you hear the thunder in the distance? Can you hear the crackle of the flame? Can you hear the beating of my dark, wild heart? My heart might be in chains, but my soul's still untamed. I feel like a cold black stallion, running proud and lonely in the dust. I'm racing like smoke through the canyon with the only one I trust. Can you hear the thunder in the distance? Can you hear the crackle of the flame? Can you hear the beating of my dark, wild heart? My heart might be in chains, but my soul is still untamed.
Joining me today on the Culture Catch is the national treasure and bluegrass legend, Del McCorry. Del, welcome to the Culture Catch.
How you doing, Dusty?
Pretty good. Why is bluegrass music so infectious?
Well, you know, I've wondered about that. Probably the only way I could explain that is the way I felt when I first heard it. You know, and I was only a kid then. I first heard Bill Monroe. We used to listen to the Grand Ole Opry at home, and I heard Bill Monroe back then when he had Flatt & Scruggs, but, you know, I was never really, I don't know. I saw Bill the first time in 1950, and then I had a record of Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs, and banjo's what got me, the way he played, you know. And before that, it seemed like all the music I'd heard was really slow and draggy, you know. And for a kid, they're not interested in that stuff, you know. They want to hear something that's got some spark, you know.
A little pep.
Earl Scruggs had it, buddy. He had that spark, you know. In his banjo playing, that's what got me, you know. And for other kids, I can't say, you know. And I think that you have to be a certain age, too, for things like that to affect you, you know. I was 11, I guess, when I heard Earl Scruggs, and I've not been right since, you know.
Well, what is, you know, you go to a bluegrass show, and I don't care if you're like this hard-line, snobby New Yorker. You know, Ricky Skaggs played in town about a month ago, uh-huh. and everyone was enjoying themselves, you know. And it was at Lincoln Center Outdoors, summer. Mm-hmm. People love bluegrass music, even though they may say, oh, I don't know it, I don't like it. But there's something about it that's infectious.
I think so, you know. I've been playing this town since I worked for Bill Monroe in 1963, I guess. I quit then and moved to California because, you know, everything, I thought everything's in California, so there's where I'll go, you know. But it's a great town for bluegrass. It always has been. It really has. Played so many different places in this town since 63, you know.
Right.
And for so many different promoters. There's one promoter that died recently, Doug Tuckman. He was a bluegrass promoter for years in this town, you know. And I know New Yorkers love bluegrass, you know.
Everyone loves bluegrass.
Yeah, they do. You're right.
Let's talk about your connection with Mr. Monroe. How did that all happen? He saw you. He walked in on a little joint you were playing,
yeah.
you and your guys.
That's true. And, you know, the first date I played with Bill was in New York City at the New York University.
Wow.
I was playing in Baltimore in a little bar with an ex-bluegrass boy. His name was Jack Cook, and he'd been with Bill for maybe 4 years before that. He was his guitar player, lead singer. So I was playing there. I started playing banjo because of Harold Scruggs, and that's what I learned to do, and I did it for 10 years then. But anyway, I'll go back. So they didn't have a banjo player, and evidently some of his band had quit, and he had to come up here to New York to do that gig, you know. And so he knew that he could get Jack in Baltimore, so he stopped and got Jack, and they brought me along because they didn't have a banjo player, and he offered me a job. But by the time I accepted, you know, which is a month or two later, I can't remember exactly, he still needed a guitar player and a lead singer, so he wanted me to do that job. And I thought, man, I don't know about this. I think I'll go back home, you know. But he said, now I'll tell you, if you try it, you'll like it, you know, and he was right. I haven't went back to playing banjo since. It's crazy, you know.
Didn't something similar happen to your son as well? And Monroe kind of said, you know, Dale, you ought to give him a shot.
You know, I don't remember that now. It could be. Well, you know, when, I'll tell you, this funny thing. New York City has been a turning point for me and Ronnie, I think, because I came up here and played Lincoln Center with on a show with Bill Monroe, and I forget who else was on there. It was like a bluegrass show at Lincoln Center, and it was over the holidays, you know, like Christmas and New Year's, sometime in there. And so I came up here to play, and Ronnie was off school, you know, and he was only maybe, I don't know how old he was, maybe 10 or something. So he came along with me, and Monroe took a liking to Ronnie. And I remember at one time he was sitting, Ronnie was sitting beside Bill, and he said, now here, you play this. And he got Ronnie, and Ronnie didn't know a thing about a mandolin, you know, he's too young. But I think that's what got him into playing.
Yeah, I think that's what the Monroe website, something similar. I just wanted to.
I didn't pay that much attention, but I'm sure he did. And Ronnie did, you know. But that was New York again. Isn't that funny?
All roads lead from New York or into New York or somewhere,
it
something
must
like
be.
That. I don't know, man.
It's not California.
Well, we did have the Greenbrier Boys for a while, John
sure
Harold,
did.
Right? So, you know, there was some legit bluegrass happening.
Right.
And I guess, you know, everyone migrates from someplace, they end up here, so.
Somebody
had some roots back there, right?
That's the truth, yeah.
How was it working with Ronnie and Rob, working with your sons in the band? Was that an easy thing to do, or just a natural progression?
It is. It's easier. It's a lot easier for me, you know, because I can depend on those two guys. And then at the same time, you know, I think we think a lot alike, me and those two guys, you know. Of course, everybody in the band does, but still, because they've been with me, you know, it's been a lot easier, like, to record and get new songs. We don't have to rehearse as much because they've just been there so long, you know, and they're great musicians. I could not replace them, you know, because they're so good at what they do. And I never really expected that, you know, in the beginning, that they would become that great of musicians, but they really did. And it's, I guess it's a natural thing for them, you know, to do what they're doing. When it first started, I told Ronnie, in those days, now I'm talking about the 70s, I guess, there were a lot of young musicians then, you know, in right. bluegrass, a lot of progressive bluegrass musicians, you know. And so I thought, now these boys, they'll go for that, you know. And I told them, I said, now I tell you, don't make the mistake of watching these young guys, because they're the ones that that invented this music, you know. Bill Monroe was the first one on the mandolin, and Earl Scruggs was actually the first one to popularize the three-finger roll, and he was a genius, you know. And by this time I knew that, because I'd been studying banjo a lot up until that point.
Right.
And he was a genius. He could, Sonny Osborne told me that he could read, like, I forget how many bars ahead, exactly what was going to, he didn't practice his stuff.
Amazing.
It just came out. And he could think ahead far enough to tell if this is going to work in the end, you know what I mean?
Right, sure.
Without going out on a limb and sawing it off, you know?
Mm-hmm. Just intuitively.
It was intuitive, you know, and he could just, a guy asked him one time, he said, this banjo player that was with me said, will you play me the break to some song that they'd recorded at Cabin in Caroline, that's what it was. And anyway, he played it, but it wasn't nothing like the record. So I found out then, now this is a long time ago, I thought then, he don't play it the same every day anyway.
Mm.
He just played it that way that day.
Right.
And tomorrow he'll play it different.
Right. You know? Well, that's like any great improvisation musician, a jazz player, anyone.
Yeah.
They want to explore and push themselves a little bit.
According to how they feel, you know.
Sure, yeah. Well, how about guys like the Lilly Brothers or Roscoe Holcomb? Do you remember those guys?
I do.
Yeah?
I knew the Lillies pretty well, Everett and B. In fact, I played a place last night where they used to play.
Really?
It used to be the Club 47 in Cambridge. Yeah.
Right.
And it's called a Club Passim now, you know. But I got to know those guys. I heard them before I went with Bill, but while I was with Monroe, I got to know them, you know. And Tex Logan, Don Stover,
sure, yeah.
Great banjo player.
Yeah, sure.
He was.
How about the young guys that you see out in the scene with the festivals and everything? Who are you guys liking? Who are some of the up-and-comers? Guys like O'Brien, we know, are just, like, blazing on, you know.
Yeah.
He's pretty amazing, but...
I know. Yeah, he's a great songwriter.
Danny Barnes.
Tim is, you know. But the thing about me, I don't... Back when I was young, I listened to all these people, you know. But nowadays, I hardly ever get to hear anybody, really,
right.
You know. I just... If I want to hear bluegrass, I go back and hear that classic band, because it can't be beat. There was five guys in that band, and they were all so good at what they did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any band today, there's going to be a weak spot in that band. I know that now. I didn't know it years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a weak spot in just about every band you hear, you know.
Right. But not those guys.
Not those guys. Yeah. Oh, buddy, and I talked to Earl Scruggs one time about that. And he said, you know, back in those days when we'd record, we had to go to Chicago. Because there's no recording studios in Nashville.
Right.
It's crazy, but not till 1950.
Hard to imagine.
Yeah.
That's hard to imagine.
And he said, you know, when we went up there to Chicago, we were strutting our stuff. I just wondered if they knew they were good, you know.
Hmm.
And they did. They knew they were good. Yeah, they knew it. Because I thought, well, maybe they didn't have... enough confidence to know that they were that good, but they did. They knew they were good, you know.
Well, you know, you guys have certainly got to that point with your band. You know, I mean, look
I'm fortunate. I really am.
You know, you look at your recorded music, you know.
Yeah.
You've done some masterful work on record. A lot of people that may be listening to this site may only know you through the Steve Earle connection. Maybe that was their introduction to your band.
Mm-hmm.
And then perhaps then they started to investigate what you did with Rounder or before. And then with Ricky Skaggs after, and now on your own label.
Mm-hmm.
In that big can of work, what sticks out as you saying that? That's a record that really defined where we were, where we are as a band, what I liked the most.
I see. Yeah.
What record would that be for you, Del?
Oh, man. God, I wouldn't know. I really wouldn't. All I can say is you know, I recorded all through the years, although there was years when I didn't record as often as now, you know, because I was working a day job too part of that time, you know.
Right.
And, but what should I say about that? I couldn't really
How about
tell.
The family, the record The Family?
Yeah, I know a lot of folks, you know.
That's what the critics always say. They go,
do they?
A lot of them, yeah. in the research I did on the interview, that a lot of people point to that. I mean, I happen to have that in my collection anyway. I have a lot of the Rounder stuff as well.
Yeah.
But I'm just curious as to why people have latched on to that particular record.
You know, a lot of people tell me that, and you know, I forget exactly what's on that record. I know I shouldn't. I know people request those songs, and I know most of them, I think.
Right,
know?
Right.
But still, it's hard.
I'm sorry, you do a great version of Nashville Cats, that John Sebastian song. You know that one.
Yeah, that's on that record, isn't it?
Yeah.
God, yeah, that's right.
In Nashville, and they can pick more notes than a number of eights on a Tennessee eight hill. There's 1,352 guitar cases in Nashville, and any one of them packs of guitar can play twice as better than I will.
Nashville cats
play clean as country water.
Nashville cats
play wild as Mountain Dew.
Nashville cats
been playing since they've been. Get work before they're too. Yeah, I was just 13. You might say I was a musical proverbial knee high when I heard a couple new sounding tunes on the tube and they blasted me sky high. Then the record man said, everyone is yellow sun record from Nashville, and up north there ain't nobody buys them. And I said, but I will. And it was
Nashville cats
play clean as country water.
Nashville cats
play wild as Mountain Dew.
Nashville cats
been playing since they's baby.
Nashville cats
get work before they. Friends play music and they ain't uptight if one of the kids will, because it's custom made for any mother's son to be a guitar picker in Nashville. And I sure am glad I got a chance to say a word about the music and the mothers in Nashville.
Nashville cats
play clean as country water.
Nashville cats
play wild as Mountain Dew.
Those Nashville cats
been playing since they baby.
All them Nashville cats
get work before they're too.
So good at what they do, and I'm sure that our later records are better than my early records. You know, for one thing, the sound quality is a lot better now, and preparation for the records, I prepare better now than I did back then. You know, because a lot of times we'd learn songs on the way to the studio, and or in the studio,
sure.
And I don't do that anymore. We'll do a lot of preparing, you know, beforehand. Like we'll run through the stuff for all the songs, and, you know. Well, first you got to figure out what songs you're going to do, you know, and that takes a while. And then when we do figure out what we're going to do, then you have to figure out what key and the speed and all that. And there's a lot of preparation now where 20 years ago I didn't do that much, you know.
Sure. People forget the precision that is required to play bluegrass. If you've never played music, or if you played music and you've not played this style of music,
the
lightning quick changes, and you got to really be on the one when you got to be on the one.
Yeah.
Or else it's a train wreck.
Yeah, that's true.
But
that's right. You know, timing is so important in any band, as far as that goes, you know. But sometimes, you know, bluegrass bands, they have certain numbers that are breakneck, you know. And if you've got a guy in there that's just slacking, you know, he's not going to last. But I'm fortunate right now with the band I have at this moment, you know, these guys can really cut it. And that just makes me feel so good, you know.
Sure. I want to ask you a little bit, Del, about some of the artists you've collaborated. I was surprised to find out that you did a collaboration with Phish.
Yeah?
Yeah, and I thought, that's pretty extraordinary. And then Steve Earle we know about. How did some of those things come about? Were that through the boys, or were these people that sought you guys out? Or?
Well, I tell you, Steve, I guess the way it was with Steve, I was recording for Rounder then, and Ken Irwin called him up in California, and I'll go back a little. He had this song, and Ken pitched it to me. It was a Steve Earle song. What was that song? Can't even remember now. But anyway, it only had a verse or two verses. It was short.
Mm-hmm.
And so he called Steve up in California and said, Steve, can you, do you have any more verses to this song? You know, we're thinking about recording it. And Steve said, no, but I'll write one. So he wrote it and called Ken back on the phone in the studio, and we recorded it, you know.
Wow.
And that's how I got to know Steve, and he said that was about the lowest point in his life, and that kind of boosted him when he found out somebody was going to record one of his songs, you know. And that's kind of how I got to know Steve. But Phish, well, it was kind of the same way with the Phish. Now, well, I wrote this song, and Phish recorded it on a live record. And once they did, you know, they called me. I think Trey did. I'm not sure who it was, but they wanted to do a show with them, you know, and I really didn't know who they were, because kind of narrow-minded when it comes to other bands, you know. I just don't listen, and I don't know what's going on, you know. And anyway, they wanted us to do this festival up there in New York, up on the lake, you know. They had this festival, and so I think I was playing in New York somewhere else, and it worked out that we'd go do that. So we went and played it, and man, it was like 70,000 kids there, you know. and so when I met Trey there then, he said, what can we sing together, you know? And I said, well, I don't know, whatever, you know, whatever you want to do. And I didn't realize that he knew about hardcore bluegrass. And so he said, how about Blue and Lonesome, you know? And I said, you know that song? Yeah, he said, you want to do it? And that just happened to be a song that Bill Monroe and Old Hank wrote together, you
right.
know? And they recorded around 1950. Well, that's pretty old stuff, you know? So I said, yeah, man. So we did a duet on Blue and Lonesome.
Wow, that's fantastic. Kids must have loved that.
And I found out then, you know, he researched this music. He knew about bluegrass, you know?
Trey that always did. Makes you feel better when a musician appreciates your genre of music.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. How about Dave Grissom? Did he ever approach you to do anything with him, or when Jerry Garcia was doing his bluegrass side projects?
Gosh, I've known David since he lived over here in New Jersey, and he was about 12.
Wow.
What happened? Now, when I was with Monroe, I don't know how old he was. I was just guessing there, but we stayed at his parents' house because they were gone somewhere on vacation. And Ralph Rensselaer was managing Bill Monroe then when mm-hmm. I was with him. And so Ralph said, well, look, and he knew David and his parents. He said, Bill, we'll just have the boys stay there in that house, big house, you know. So and David was still there. I mean, he was there, I guess, with, I don't know who he's staying with, but he was home. And I got to know David. And then I think when I quit Bill Monroe, he called me and he said, I've got this job in Troy, New York, and I wonder if you'd come up and play it with me. David and my brother Jerry was a bass player. They played with Red Allen, so they knew each other actually better than I knew David then. But anyway, I said, yeah. So I went up there then and played that date with him. And so 20 years later, 30 years later, he called me up and he said, hey, you know what? I got this tape of that thing. And he said, I think I can clean it up and release it if you'll sign a release, you know. And I said, sure, I don't care. I thought, well, I don't know what's on it. But anyway, and so he did, and it was called Early Dog. That was his... He figured, well, that's probably like his earliest stuff. So right. he released that
thing. Early Dog.
And it was called Early Dog.
D-A-W-G.
Yeah. Jerry Garcia, I was playing with my own band, and I was playing in Virginia at a bluegrass festival. It's like middle 60s or late 60s. And so David, I played one day, and I was getting ready to leave, go do another date somewhere. And David came in, and he said, I want you to meet my new banjo player. And it was Jerry Garcia, you know, he's a real dark-headed guy.
Yeah.
And I didn't know it, but Jerry had been coming to the shows when we played with Monroe out there in the Ash Grove, you know, earlier. We played there about 2 weeks one time, and Garcia would come out, you know, and... He'd come out, and the white boys, you know, Clarence and Roland.
Clarence, what a guitar player he was.
Yeah, all those guys. And
yeah.
I think that the 2 weeks that we played there, Doc Watson opened for Bill Monroe. And they said that after Clarence watched Doc for 2 weeks, that he just opened up, man, just like that.
Really?
It's like turning the light on for him, you know. He could see it. He could see how Doc was doing these
things, you know.
And... But those musicians, you know, I knew most of them when they were just kids, you know.
And they're all, you know, Jerry, I mean, this is what people forget. He was a big bluegrass. He loved all forms of American music.
Yeah,
and that's what I'd heard from a friend who had actually taken a few lessons from Jerry on banjo, that Jerry really loved the banjo.
Yeah, he did.
Interesting.
He was a banjo player, you know, he was. Said he wanted to be a bluegrass boy, but you know how things turned out. Instead of being a bluegrass boy, he started making a lot of money.
Those guys were the hardest working band in show business. We talk about a band that toured,
yeah.
What other artists outside of the bluegrass field have you ever thought you'd like to collaborate with?
Boy, you know, I like Vince Gill.
Yeah.
I really like Vince. He's such a great musician.
Don't get on a golf course with him, though, because I heard he's a scratch golfer.
Yeah, he is. But he's such a great musician and a great singer. And the best part about him all, he's a great guy. Yeah. He's just so down to earth. I mean, there's not a jealous bone in his body or anything like that, you know. He's just such a great guy, and he can do anything.
Yeah.
He can do anything that guy can, you know.
He can play
bluegrass, or he can play any music, far as that goes, you know. And he can play it on different instruments, too, you know.
Well, maybe Vince is listening. Maybe we can get him hooked up. Vince, yeah. If you're listening, hook it up with Dell.
I toured with him all last summer. You know,
did?
We did that Down from the Mountain tour.
Right.
Wait a minute.
That was a couple of years ago.
The Down from the Mountain was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
But last year we did the Grand Ole Opry on the show road shows.
Ah.
You know, what I'm saying is on the road shows.
Right.
We did, and it was Vince and me and Patty Loves. She's a great singer,
oh,
too.
Yeah.
I love to sing with Patty. And, who else? Oh, the new young singer. She's really good. If I can remember her name. Oh.
Julie Roberts?
No, she's...
Younger? Gretchen Wilson?
No, this one is still there in Nashville. She hasn't got it. She didn't bust out yet real big.
Miranda before. Lambert?
No, this one, man, can really sing. This cat can sing.
Uh-oh.
I wish I could remember names better. I'll have to ask them boys.
Ask the boys and we'll drop it in. I love those singers, some of those girls.
But we did that tour, you know, with the Grand Ole Opry Roadshow, and that's when I really got to know Vince and sang with him, you know. He'd come out and sing one with my band, Bluegrass, because he used to do a lot of bluegrass.
Right.
You know? And I think he's just a great guy, you know, to sing with. And I enjoyed singing with Tim O'Brien.
Oh, love Tim.
Really. I did one with him on one of these last records. I forget what song it was. Oh, it was about a computer. Did you hear one about a computer?
I didn't hear that cut. I'll have to look for that.
I sang with him on that.
Why do you think there's a whole new generation of music fans that have discovered bluegrass as of late?
You know, I think there's a lot of different things, you know, that...
Was it the movie, Oh Brother, Wherefore Art Thou, that kind of helped?
That was a big part of it.
Yeah, and then the tour that you guys did with it, off of it.
Yeah, the Down from the Mountain tour. Because I'm sure a lot of folks came out to see that tour just to see what it was. They had no idea what bluegrass was. Or, you know, it wasn't all bluegrass either. It was, you know, kind of a mixture. Like some old-timey music and some country. That's part of it, I think. And I just don't really know. I know we've been playing to younger fans for at least 10 years now, you know. A lot of it with me, I think, is my manager and my booking agent, you know. I think they have a lot to do with what we've done recently or lately.
You got the bobblehead doll now on the website. I was telling Ken, I said, Ken, I got to get a bobblehead doll. And you got the tie-dye t-shirts and everything.
Oh, man. I didn't know. That's funny, my booking agent, his name's Bobby Cudd, and he works for Monterey.
Sure, Monterey's great, yeah.
He said, you need to get a bobblehead. And I said, what? What are you talking about? Now, I didn't talk to him about it. I didn't want to talk about it. But he kept talking to my manager and my wife about that, and they finally... They did that, you know, and so I said, well, I guess I'll let them do that.
There you
kind
go.
Kind of embarrassing.
You know, next time you go to the stadium, you get your Del McCoury bobblehead doll and Ken Griffey or whomever.
Hey, you know, my hair looked better. I mean, that guy's hair, the bobblehead looked a lot better than this.
Hey, you're looking all right, though, for a guy that just got up, I'm telling you. What's your favorite piece of music, Dale? If you had to say, like, boil it down, I know it's probably hard. Is there one song that you always come back to that's just like, you know, like comfort food for you?
Oh, like that I've recorded. You know, I don't have any favorites. It's funny. I always like variety, you know, and I just don't have a favorite song, you know. I like to do what the fans want to hear of the songs I've recorded, you know. And,
yeah.
And so that's about what I do every night. I just do those requests, you know. And now I'll tell you what, I have some favorite songs of some guys before me.
Okay, what are those?
And one was Lester Flatt and Benny Martin doing Someone Took My Place With You. Great. It was like fiddle and Lester Flatt singing.
Right.
And if you ever get a chance, listen to the fiddle on it. It's, okay. It's all fiddle. It's
right.
All fiddle and vocal.
Right.
Because he takes all the breaks. There's backup banjo and all like that. But that was so good, you know. Those guys were so good back in those days, I'm telling you. Of course, Benny Martin passed away maybe 4 years ago now, you know. But he was one of the pioneers, and he was a double-stop fiddle king. Mm. You know, he could play those double stops, triple stops. And he had a record, Me and My Fiddle, where he had played an eight-string fiddle. You know, it was so good. Yeah.
But, virtuosos.
Yeah, he was really great. He started playing with a professional band there in the Grand Ole Opry, I think, when he was like 14.
Right.
He was just a great fiddle player, you know.
Besides music, what are you most passionate about, Dale?
Boy, you know... family, I think. Family. I've got grandkids now, you know, and I really, like, I never do much, I never did much fishing, I never did much hunting, I never did do golfing. Probably played with the wrong end of the stick. But, you know, and I never was into sports. From an early age, I was just so wrapped up in music, you know, from an early age. And if I had spare time when I was young, when I should have been out hunting or fishing or something, I was playing music, you know.
Right.
That's all I thought about. And so I think once you settle in doing it like that, then, you know, it's too late. Now I don't really have any interest, you know, in like golfing. I used to be a big football fan,
right.
You know. I never played football. But... and now I kind of got out of that now, you know. I guess it's my grandkids, you know, they keep me busy. I've got three boys and two girls, and the oldest one are boys, and, you know, they're just so, It's hard to love boys. They ain't still long enough, you know.
Right, yeah.
But those girls, I'm telling you, they're so different. They're just about this big. Ronnie's got one.
Right.
And Rob's got one.
Right.
And they're just... girls are so different from boys when they're little.
Do they take the bluegrass music? Do they like to hear... Do you play them songs or do you play them other kinds of songs?
Actually, I don't. You know, I don't... kind of when I'm right at home, you know, I don't even think about... like playing anymore, you know, at home. But they'll come and visit, you know, and the one, my daughter-in-law, she dances sometimes at the Grand Ole Opry, you know, she fills in and dances, and that, her daughter, she likes to dance too, and she's only about this big, you know.
Right, right.
It's so funny.
What advice, Del, do you have for up-and-coming musicians, artists, writers?
Well, you know, we did last night, yesterday afternoon it was, we went over to Berklee School of Music in Boston there, and we played a few songs, then we answered questions, you know, and stuff, and there's some young musicians in there, and they asked me that same question, and I told them, you know, the only thing, only advice I could give them is, I think back about me when I was young. And I know that what I did at first, when I first started playing music, I copied. I guess that's the way everybody does, you know. But then soon, it wasn't long after that, I found out that I had to do my own stuff, you know. I had to record my own songs. I had to sing the way I sang, the way it felt for me to sing, because back then I was even copying singers, you know. Mm. I could.
Sure.
I was able to do it. But I thought, you know, so, and I found out what I was interested in and what you have to do what you want to do all through life. And you have to start it young, I think, because and the songs that you choose to record, if you're a singer or if you're a musician, the things you choose to do in early life sets your style for the rest of your life. You don't realize that when you're young, but I do now, you know. That what I chose to do then, like in recording, you know, or whatever, that's your style in later years, and it sets you apart from whoever,
right?
You know, and you have to stick with it. But first, you gotta love it. If you don't love it, forget it, because it won't last. You know, you won't last. And you know, I've seen a lot of musicians that played good for a while. I mean, they were kind of genius musicians, you know, but I don't think their heart was really in it, because before long they were doing something else, you know. Mm-hmm. they quit playing. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the first thing, you got to really love it and find out what it is you love before you'll accomplish anything, you know.
Right. How do you keep your great tenor in shape?
Well, I don't. In fact, I'm hoarse now, you know.
Well, maybe we're going to, and this is one final question, so you
that's
can
all
rest.
Right.
I'm sorry. You got a show today.
Well, that's okay.
No secrets or anything, huh?
Not really. You know, I don't warm up before I go
on stage.
You don't
smoke or anything like that.
I did for years. I smoked for about 20, could have been 30 years. I smoked from the 20s to about 48, I quit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really glad I did. I just, my voice changed too when I quit smoking. I could tell the tone was different, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I tell you, I don't, you know, when I get on stage, I don't know what I'm going to sound like when I step up there, you know. It could be good and it could be bad, but I just don't try it before I get up there. I think, well, if it's going to be good, it's going to be good. If it's going to be bad, it'll be bad. And I don't know how to warm up, you know. I just always warmed up on stage. And the bad thing, see, I'm a member of the Grand Ole Opry now.
Right.
And the only thing that I don't like about the Opry, I love everything about it, but you go out there and you have to warm up in one song or two, you know, and you can't do that, really.
Right.
You just, so I do have to sing in the dressing room there. And I have to remind myself every time I go, I got to sing before I go on.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Because you don't have a chance to warm up to the audience or anything.
Sure.
There. It's just, it's a fast-moving show, you know.
Sure, yeah.
In the back of my mind, I always wanted to be a member of the Opry, but I never really pushed it. One time I said to Pete Fisher, I said, you know, if there's ever a chance, I would love to become a member of the Opry because I played a lot guest spots, you mm-hmm. know. I played more guest spots then than I play now as a member because I'm so busy. We're gone all the time, mm-hmm. you know. All of a sudden, you know, about 2 years ago, we were doing the IBMA, the International Bluegrass Music Association Award Show in Louisville, Kentucky. And we won the Entertainer of the Year. And so I was up there talking, you know, starting to talk about it at the podium, and these two guys walked up beside me. I wondered who it was, and I looked, and it was Sonny Osborne and Ricky Skaggs. And I thought, now these guys, they got something up their sleeve, you know. And I just play along with them and see what it is, you know. And so Sonny says to me, where were you at 40 years ago tonight? And I said, man, I don't know. Who knows, you know. And I thought, is this a joke? So then the next thing he said was, well, what are you doing a certain date? And I think it was October the 25th. I said, I don't know that either, man. You'll have to ask my booking agent. Well, he said, we want you to join the Grand Ole Opry. He and Ricky both did, you know.
Wow.
So that's how I found out about it. Well, then, you know, I'm supposed to finish this speech. Well, I couldn't think of anything after that.
Oh, sure, of course not.
Of course, I said some things. I don't know if it made sense or not. But that's how it was about 2 years ago now, you know.
That's great.
And,
congratulations.
It's yeah. a great thank you. It's a great honor, you know, and it's a great club to belong to. There's very few people in it, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Just 80-some members, I guess.
It's amazing. One final question for you, Del, and then we'll let you rest up before your show. We look forward to seeing you tonight. How would you like to be remembered?
The guy that really made it pretty good late in life. That's one thing, I think. Because, you know, I played music all my life and never really had a plan. You know, I never really did. But later, like, say, 7-8 years ago, well, I had these booking agents all my life, you know, and I had never had a manager. And really didn't think I needed one. And so I have to thank Ricky Skaggs because when my contract was up with Rounder Records, and I was going to record again with them, you know, but I just wasn't in the mood to do it. And so I was just dragging my feet on recording. And so Ricky called me up one day and he said, I heard your contract's up with Rounder. He said, I'd like to talk to you about recording for me, you know. Evidently, he just started this label up. He'd started up Skaggs Family label, and he wanted to have this other subsidiary, I guess, called Kaylee.
Right.
And he wanted me to record, and I said, well, yeah, I'll meet with you, you know, but I didn't think I'd be interested. But then I met with him, and Stan Strickland was mm-hmm. his manager and partner in the record company. And so I'd known Ricky since he's about 15, you know.
Right.
And he offered me a really good deal, and I said, well, I can't turn that down, you know. So that's how I got to know Stan Strickland then. And so he said, well, now along with this, Stan will manage you also, you know, and he's managing me now. And so I got a manager, and then I found out what a great thing they are, if they're good.
Mm.
You know, he works between me and my booking agent and the publicist and all this and that, and that's the way eventually we got the record company started, because he had done all these things, you know. He'd been a booking agent as a kid, and he'd been a publicist, he'd been everything in the music business, you know. And
he knew it soup to nuts.
Yeah, he knew the ins and outs of running. He said, I'm probably gonna be sorry I'm telling you this, but this is the time for you to do a record company. I said, I don't want a record company. Then he got to tell me, you know, well, you know, he helped Ricky get his going after he got out of the country, you know, got off that label. And they're no longer partners in, he don't manage Ricky anymore, but they're still partners in the label.
Mm.
And but they're going to dissolve partnerships, I think, soon. But he's been great for me, you know. And I just worked at it all my life till just in the later years, you know, things really started to happen because business, you know, everything's got to be a business, I guess.
Well, you're doing well, Del.
Thank you.
I want to thank you for being on the Culture Catch and sharing your stories.
Yeah.
Continued success to you and the family and the band and everything else. And
right.
We'll look for you tonight and somewhere down the road.
Good enough.
Thank you.
Thanks, Del.
I'm just some hand-me-down. Is that any way for a good girl to act? I guess I'll have to face the cold hard fact. Next day you treat me like I'm just some hand-me-down. Is that any way for a good girl to act? I guess I'll have to face the cold hard fact. Treat me like I'm just some hand-me-down. Is that any way for a good girl to act? I guess I'll have to face the cold hard fact.
I'd like to thank our sponsors for today's podcast, Liberty Boot Company. They make some of the coolest boots on the planet, from Madonna to Ozzy to you, 100% handmade boots. Check them out at libertyboot.com. Final Draft, the industry standard script writing software. You can check them out at www.finaldraft.com. And our web sponsor, WebHSP. For all of your web hosting needs, it's WebHSP. This is Dusty Wright for the Culture Catch. Converge is the word.